Thank you. Good afternoon. May it please the court. My name is Sarah Kellogg and I represent the appellant, Mr. Sylvester, in this case. Today I plan to discuss the third issue in my brief, the denial of the requested lesser included offense instructions, but I'm happy to answer any questions about any of the other issues as well. In this case, the state charged Mr. Sylvester with first-degree murder after deliberation and felony murder, along with several other related offenses. The defense requested lesser-included offenses of second-degree murder, reckless manslaughter, and criminally negligent homicide. The jury convicted Mr. Sylvester of the second-degree murder offense and acquitted him of first-degree murder and all of the other charges that were brought by the state. The standard for getting instructions in a homicide case on lesser-included offenses is minimal. It's any evidence, whatever, even if that evidence is improbable, unreasonable, or slight. In this case, there was no reason for the trial court to deny the two lesser-included offense instructions and to only give the second-degree murder instruction. The court's reasons for rejecting those instructions were clearly wrong. It seemed to misunderstand the law or misapply it, and it's clear that the court, especially in its denial of the reckless manslaughter instruction, said that you can't be reckless with a deliberate act, which is sort of the court acting as the 13th juror finding deliberation, which is the question, the ultimate question for the jury. Here, the low standard required to meet, for the defense to meet to get the lesser included offense instructions was met. There was, however improbable, unreasonable, or slight, there was evidence. The evidence in this case was largely circumstantial. And granted, there is not much evidence of what truly happened the night that Ms. Warren was shot. But the evidence, nonetheless, was enough to meet this low standard for the defense to get those two lesser included instructions. There was no evidence of motive other than what the state presented, and which was presumably rejected by the jury when they acquitted Mr. Sylvester of all those charges. The only evidence that we really have are the vague and unclear statements that Mr. Sylvester made during his lengthy interrogation, which I challenge should be suppressed in issue one. But taking those statements into consideration, he was very vague in his recounting. He couldn't remember a lot. And it's just unclear, really, what actually happened. What is clear is that the jury rejected first-degree murder after deliberation.
Ms. Kellogg, excuse me, I'd like to come back to something that you talked about a moment ago.
Certainly.
And it's true that you have that there has to be some evidence that would allow the court, a jury, to be able to convict on one of these lesser-included offenses. Now, I identified five statements that you mentioned in your brief as potentially meeting the standard for some evidence. One is that he didn't know, he said, I don't even know if I shot her.
Right.
How does that constitute evidence of one of the lesser crimes?
So I think it's important to always remember that for this test of whether or not the defense should have gotten these lessers, we take the evidence in the light most favorable to the defendant. So taking that statement in the light most favorable to the defendant, I don't even know if I shot her, could be understood as, I shot the gun, but I don't know if I hit her. I was shooting the gun. I wasn't aiming directly at her. I mean, there's several constructions that could be made.
Well, I think that if the defendant had said, I shot the gun, but I wasn't aiming at her, that perhaps that would constitute some evidence.
That
but he
great.
Did not say that.
He didn't go that far.
He right. didn't say that. So help me understand how the words, I don't know if I shot her, constitute evidence that could support a verdict by the jury, sufficient evidence for the jury to convict of either criminally negligent homicide or reckless.
Right. Well, that statement taken in the light most favorable to the defendant is a statement that, I mean, he also said, I think it was me, he said, I don't know if I shot her. Considering this sort of in the totality of the circumstances, and there are other circumstances that also support giving these instructions that just to meet this minimum test, but in the light most favorable to the defendant, I don't even know if I shot her, could mean I didn't shoot the gun, but it could also mean I don't know if I hit her. It could mean a variety of things. And I think, you know, it would have been helpful if he had gone further to say it was an accident.
What evidence supports a reasonable conclusion that either the act was committed with conscious disregard of a substantial risk or that it was negligently committed? I don't know whether I shot her. It doesn't tell us anything about whether it was a conscious disregard of a risk or whether it was a negligent act.
Right, and I think that's exactly what the jury needed to decide. They had that statement.
What evidence is there that would support the jury's conclusion that it was only a conscious disregard of a substantial risk or a negligent act? What evidence would support that conclusion?
Well, I think I'll go through the evidence that I think supports that conclusion. I think that statement does support it on its own. I think other circumstances, the fact that there was evidence that he said he was very drunk and very high that night, that his face was chattering, that he heard voices laughing at him. The shot was from a distance. It was not an execution-style shooting in this case. There was some suggestion that it was from...
What distance was it again, counsel?
They could never determine the actual distance. The coroner testified that he didn't know how far away it was. He said the injury was consistent with a shot from 4 to 6 feet, but there was other testimony that if it had been 6 feet or closer, there would have been blowback on the gun, and there was none. So in closing argument, the prosecutor actually said it had to have been conceded, essentially had to have been more than 6 feet.
And 6 feet would not be, would be a long distance?
Well, it was the middle of the night. It was in an area that had no lights. There was some testimony from other neighboring people who lived nearby that it was foggy that evening. I think taking all of that, along with the fact that the defendant likely was severely impaired from his intoxication on a foggy, dark night, and made statements that he didn't even know if he shot her, which I think he construed in several different ways, just along with his other statements, I think it was me, I see myself in the truck, I hear people laughing at me. I think this court, taking all that evidence in the light most favorable to the defendant, I think that absolutely meets that minimum standard to get the two lesser included instructions that were denied. I also think that that evidence is equally evidence of knowing conduct as it is of reckless disregarding substantial and justifiable risk or criminally negligent. There's no reason why the trial court should have given a second degree murder instruction to not be such.
Well, let's look at it from the opposite direction, counsel. Let's say he was, that the lesser included instruction was given on reckless homicide, and the only evidence to support it were these statements. I think you'd be in front of us saying there was insufficient evidence to convict him.
And that's an entirely different standard. You're absolutely right, Judge. I mean, that is just not the standard that this court should apply for the question here of whether, in the first instance, the defendant should have gotten those lesser included instructions. And I think there's one of the cases, I can't remember if it's Shaw or Rivera, one of the cases in this very long line of cases in Colorado, says that you don't have to show that the jury would have convicted of any of the lessers, and the jury may very well on retrial come back with second degree murder. But that's not the point. The point is Mr. Sylvester's right to have the jury consider those lessers. And again, the case law in Colorado is very strong that it's ultimately a jury question.
So it doesn't have to be strong enough evidence to support a conviction.
No. I mean, it just has to be any evidence, whatever, however unreasonable. It can be unreasonable and improbable evidence.
Well, I understand that the jury doesn't have to buy it, but doesn't it have to at least be sufficient evidence to support a conviction?
No, I think that that's an entirely different question for what supports the verdict. I think that that's a totally different standard than whether the defense gets the instruction in the first place. I think those are separate standards.
So your position is that you would be entitled to a lesser offense instruction, which, if you were successful getting it, you could turn around and then argue, I should have my conviction wiped out for insufficient evidence.
I don't think that that's my position. I don't think so. I think they're just two different standards. I think it's apples and oranges for this court to look at. In the first instance, you get the instruction, well, we're going to say no because there would be insufficient evidence for the jury to convict. That's just not the way the case law has framed it over a century in this state.
Hasn't the case law framed it as it would be evidence upon which the jury could find the elements of the lesser offense.
Right, but even improbable or unreasonable evidence.
Right.
Yeah, so there can't be no evidence. There does have to be some evidence, but I think we easily meet that test here. And I don't think it's a question of sufficiency, and I don't think this court should consider what the jury's verdict would have been, because the cases say that, we don't have to say that they would have come back with the lesser or the greater. The question here is whether there was any evidence.
That's true, whether there's any evidence, but if you had asked for the lesser offense and gotten it and been successful, I don't think the law would permit you to come back now and say, but the evidence wasn't sufficient to convict him on the lesser offense.
You know, Judge, I haven't actually thought about that, and so I can't, off the top of my head, give you a great answer.
That's fine. I'm taking up your time. Thank you.
That's all right. I just want to reiterate that, you know, going through the lack of motive, his unclear statements, I think the statements that this court has highlighted as evidence that supports getting the lesser, the fact that he was severely impaired from intoxication is a circumstance for the jury to consider, that it was shot from a distance of, it appears, more than 6 feet on a dark, foggy night, are all circumstances. That's the evidence here, and the trial court's decision was clearly wrong. There is evidence in the light most favorable to the defendant to get the lesser included offense instructions, and he should have gotten them in this case. If there are no other questions, I'll reserve the remainder of my time for rebuttal.
Thank you. We have 3 minutes and 43 seconds. Ms. Grundy.
May it please the court, my name is Erin Grundy, registration number 41271, and I represent the people. In this case, the trial court properly denied the defendant's requested instructions for reckless manslaughter and criminally negligent homicide, as the defendant did not meet the burden of showing any evidence, a scintilla of evidence, to justify giving these instructions. In order to justify giving any lesser included homicide instruction, there must be a rational basis to justify that instruction. Now, the people certainly agree that this is a low standard, and in general, in homicide cases, lesser included offenses are appropriate. But that is only because there must be some evidence. Improbable, unlikely, perhaps discredited by other testimony, but there still must be some evidence so that a jury can rationally base an opinion on that lesser included offense.
So excuse me, Ms. Grundy, let me ask you the flip side of the question that I was just asking your learned colleague. Does it have to be evidence that would be sufficient to support the conviction?
It has to be some evidence that would provide a rational basis for that conviction. It can be evidence that is plainly refuted by other evidence, but the jury has to be able to hang his hat on something. One example of this would be the Mata Medina case, where the defendant had buried the victim, moved her. It was fairly clear that it was an intentional act, and the defendant had done a number of affirmative things, including renting a car, telling his wife. But the court found that in that case, a lesser included instruction was appropriate for criminally negligent homicide because the defendant had told his wife on a number of occasions that this was an accident. So there was some evidence for the jury to base its finding of criminally negligent homicide. Granted, it was improbable, and the jury likely would have rejected it had they been given. But there was a rational basis of some evidence for the jury to base its finding. Here, we don't have that rational basis for either reckless manslaughter or for criminally negligent homicide. Now, to justify reckless manslaughter, a person must consciously disregard a substantial and unjustifiable risk that a result will occur or the circumstances exist. Barczewski tells us that we can look to the facts of the crime. We can look to the actual wounds that the victim suffers as evidence of whether there may be a lesser degree of culpability, in this case, whether there might be recklessness. Now, in the reply brief, the defendant disputes that Barczewski applies because in that case, the defendant used a knife, and in this case, the defendant used a gun. But the people certainly contend that the facts of the case and the wounds that the victim suffers can be used as evidence to show whether there was an intentional act. And certainly, the facts of this case do not show a mere reckless act. We have the coroner testifying that the victim was shot somewhere between 4 to 6 feet. Now, certainly, we don't know exactly what happened in this case, but we do have a large caliber or high capacity rifle. shooting the victim at point-blank range in the head, dislodging brain matter, and fracturing her skull. We see that she's left on the side of the road in a remote location, left dead or dying, that she's been tased, that she's been beaten, and that there is no indication in this case that there was any type of reckless act. There's no drag racing, there's no fight, there's no evidence of anything along those lines. This isn't a Russian roulette situation. We don't have a reckless act that shows consciously disregarding a risk. And the defendant points to his own intoxication as possibly negating the culpable mental state of knowingly. But that's simply not the case. While voluntary intoxication may negate with intent for first-degree murder after deliberation, it does not negate the mental state of knowingly, and it certainly does not downgrade second-degree murder to reckless manslaughter. And Barshevsky directly addresses this question. The intoxication cannot support a lesser-included offense for reckless manslaughter. Similarly, there is no evidence to support criminally negligent homicide. We have no negligent act in this case, showing a gross deviation from the standard of care that a reasonable person would exercise. Now, the people agree that the trial court misunderstood the standard of care requirement that's required for criminally negligent homicide. A person need not owe a particular or heightened duty of care. They simply need not deviate from the standard of care a reasonable person would exercise. Here, there is no evidence to support a negligent act. Now, we don't have the Montevideo situation where there was some evidence of an accident. However incredible, however improbable, some evidence of an accident. That simply is not present here, and the victim's injuries do not support a negligent act. Now, Castor is another example where there was some evidence of a negligent act. There, the defendant testified that the gun may have just gone off while he was dropping it or in some sort of a fight with the victim. Here, there's no sign of struggle between the defendant and the victim. We have no indication from any of the defendant's interviews that he and the victim in any way struggled, or that the gun may have just gone off accidentally. And as I said, the close range and the severe damage to the victim do not demonstrate a merely negligent act. This type of injury does not show an accident.
What about the contrast in his statements? It might have been me. I don't know if it was me.
And there's certainly some development in the defendant's testimony, but there's never any affirmative statement in the defendant's interviews that this was an accident. I didn't mean to shoot her.
Well, let me ask you, can you extrapolate very far from, I don't know if it was me, I think it was me, can you extrapolate very far to it was an accident?
Your Honor, it is that type of extrapolation that does not show a scintilla. Now, this is, places inference upon inference upon inference. The defendant saying, I don't know it was me, is consistent with his theory of the case that Elizabeth Angel was actually the one who murdered the victim. So it's consistent with his theory of alternate suspect. It doesn't show, I didn't mean to shoot her. Instead, it says, I don't even know if I was there. The defendant's testimony initially in his first interview says, I didn't have anything to do with this. And in the second interview, he says, maybe I did this. We don't know. But that is not sufficient to show the scintilla required to justify a lesser-included homicide offense. There must be something for the jury to rationally base his verdict, and it cannot be simply inference upon inference upon inference. And the defendant at trial never identified what this instruction should be based on, and has not done so sufficiently here to justify meeting the standard for a lesser-included homicide offense. Lesser-included offenses cannot be supported by a lack of evidence. They must instead be supported by some evidence, a scintilla, to give the jury a rational basis to convict of the lesser-included offense, or we may, as Judge Terry pointed out, instead be looking at a sufficiency claim later on. The trial judge must give only instructions that are warranted by the evidence. Here, the evidence did not justify either reckless manslaughter or criminally negligent homicide. Thus, the trial court properly denied these instructions, and the people respectfully request that this court affirm the defendant's convictions.
Okay. I disagree with Ms. Burney just in a few points. I think that she conflated a few of the standards for getting a requested lesser offense instruction with sufficiency of the evidence and the standards for verdicts. You know, you can't stack inference upon inference. The jury can't do that to support a verdict. But that's not the question when the defense is asking for a lesser included offense instruction. It's, again, a very low standard, as this court has heard sufficiently, I believe. I think that she was also addressing what evidence could support intentional murder or knowing murder. And that's, again, also not the question. The fact that there may have been some evidence to support those offenses is not whether there's any evidence to support the lessers as well. So it's a different question for this court. And also thinking about Your Honor's questions regarding whether there's sufficient evidence, it would be a little strange, I will admit, in a trial for a defense counsel to potentially request lesser included offense instructions and then maybe make like a motion for judgment of acquittal to say there's not sufficient evidence for anything. That might be a strange anomaly. I've never seen that happen.
Well, assuming that you're correct and all you need is a scintilla and not sufficient evidence to get the instruction.
And that's absolutely the standard.
All right. And then what about the point that it can't be something that wasn't said that would support the instruction?
Like
it would have to be
evidence.
Something negative evidence, exactly. It would have to be some affirmative evidence. And so what you've pointed to are inferences that could potentially be drawn from what the defendant did say. But he didn't say any of those things that you're asking to have inferred.
Yeah.
So how can his not saying that even satisfy the scintilla piece?
I think it does. Those statements coupled with the fact that it was a dark night, people said it was foggy, the gunshot was from more than 6 feet away.
Yeah, but I think I would agree with you if he had said, I shot the gun. But he didn't say that. He said, I think I shot her.
He said, I think it was me. And he said, I don't even know if I shot her. Right, and he also made some other statements kind of in there that were all confusing, but you know, you have to take it in the light most favorable to the defendant. And what are those inferences that can be drawn most favorable to the defendant is that it could potentially have been a reckless or criminally negligent shooting. I think his statements, I don't even know if I shot her, is not that negative evidence. If he never made that statement at all, that would be a different question. Would it be helpful if he made more statements that supported, you know, it would always be helpful if we had more evidence, right? But then we probably would have gotten the instructions. But I think here there was enough to meet that scintilla. It's the defendant's statements along with all of the other circumstances in this case support giving those lesser included offense instructions. It's not just his one statement in isolation, it's the totality of the circumstances, looking at all everything, including intoxication, which is not to negate the mens rea as an affirmative defense here, but it's one of the circumstances the jury can consider. And it was certainly sufficient to get those lesser. All of the circumstances here does support at some small evidence. If there are no further questions, I'd ask that this court reverse the conviction and remand for a new trial to include the lesser included offense instructions. Thank you.
Thank you to both counsel for your excellent arguments. The case is submitted, and we will render a decision in due course.